typical murderers. Some plan their crimes meticulously, while others kill on impulse.
It's Jason Voorhees.
Fred Krueger, Mother. Fred Krueger!
It is time, Michael.
When there is no more room in hell.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
The dead.
What's your favorite scary movie?
We'll walk the earth.
I'm eternal, child. I am the eater of them.
No tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The boogeyman is real.
Here's Johnny.
The blackest eyes.
Every year.
The devil's eyes.
Don't fall asleep.
It's got a death curse.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Death Curse Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Barker, and joining me tonight is Kent Mullins.
What's up, guys?
And Ben DiAtley.
Hey, how's it going?
A.K.A. Craig and Day-Day, and I'll let the audience figure out who is who on that one, unless you guys already know. Now for tonight's episode. Last week, we acknowledged a couple milestone anniversaries for one of our favorite franchises, Friday the 13th, with Freddy vs. Jason at 15 years and Jason Goes to Hell at 25 years. From now on, we will likely acknowledge many others from the horror genre, so be on the lookout for some of those coming up in the near future. And with that being said, yesterday, August 19th, there was a milestone anniversary in another one of my top horror franchises, and that's Nightmare on Elm Street. And that anniversary was the 30th for A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, The Dream Master, hitting theaters on August 19th, 1988. Now, before we kick this off, I was absolutely fucking petrified of Freddy as a child. And I was a very young kid when these films were being released, and my mom had me when she was young also, 18 for that matter, and which nowadays is obviously no big deal, but still young nonetheless. She was a senior in high school in 1982. So, of course, a couple of years later, here come the Nightmare films and stuff. So I'm a little kid when these are all coming out. And she had a sister who was a year younger. And my first actual memory of horror movies in general was of Freddy Krueger. And I just remember not even being able to, like, fucking look at him. I was that terrified. And part of that is because I think my aunt used to, like, position her fingers like Freddy's glove, you know? And I remember her just terrorizing the shit out of me and chasing me up and down the hallway and, you know, trying to do the Freddy voice or whatever. And this was obviously in the mid-80s when these were in full swing. So I know my aunt was at least a Freddy fan back then. So I just want to say thanks, Aunt Pam, if you haven't been listening. Thanks for all that. Thanks for terrorizing me. And then again, thanks to my mom, because I don't even fucking remember her, like, telling her to stop, you know. So thanks for that too, Mom, if you happen to be listening. Great parenting. So thanks. And of course, I'm joking. So then years later, after my PTSD settles down from my aunt terrorizing the fuck out of me, I remember rewatching the Nightmare films is probably, I don't know if I was maybe like in sixth or seventh grade, something like that. So I'll just say young teenager, because I really don't remember when it was. Still in the VHS days, obviously. And that's when my love for the glove began and I became a Fredhead. Now for me, 1 through 3 are my favorites, and 4, I think, always had like a different vibe for me. And I think that's because it was kind of like a transitional type of film for Nightmare. And we can get into some of those details a little bit later. And, of course, with Tuesday Night's character making the reference of dealing with Freddy before, and it's like, wait a minute, you were not in the other films, and there's no backstory. And like I said, we'll get into some of that later. So it was just, there was other things going on than what we were kind of used to seeing with how people were dying in 1 through 3. I just like to get, I guess, a little bit more definition myself. And I get that it's the Dream Master and so on, but like I said, it's just not as traditional, which I think you guys will probably agree with that, which we'll definitely discuss here shortly. And also, Freddy starts becoming more comical in this one, as we start to see in the later films. And Kent, I'm not sure how big of a Nightmare fan you are, so I'm going to let Ben go on this one now. 30 years old, 30th anniversary. Where does this film fit for you in the franchise?
It's up there for me. It's one of my favorites, actually. my actual kind of introduction to Nightmare, I was always a Jason, you know, straight slasher, Michael Myers, you know, Leatherface, Chucky kind of guy. I got into Freddy, you know, later on. I rented it. I remember watching part one and thinking like, holy shit, what have I been missing? You know, like, who the hell is this guy? So, of course, you know, we go back to the video store, we rent them all. And I think everybody really loves, like you said, one through three. Everybody loves part three. But I really enjoyed four because the characters, you know, finally kind of carried over. We had a different cast in part two. And then, you know, of course, back to Nancy in three. But, you know, we had Joey and Kincaid and all of them come back in part four at the beginning. So I really, really enjoyed that. Definitely see what you can say kind of on the whole comedy aspect. They took, you know, one of his classic lines with Welcome to Prime Time, bitch, in part three. And, you know, now we're getting, you know, you want to suck face in part four. But definitely great Freddy Krueger. I think it's just, it's classic 80s. It is where his, you know, his one-liners became a little bit more comedy. But overall, I think it's a great film. I think the effects are great. Some of the best. I mean, the nightmare, you know, Freddy's house and some of the kills. It's one of the best Freddy's. It's up there for me.
Yeah, the kills are awesome. It has great FX work, like you said. I love all that. And I don't so much mind the comedy because, of course, it adds element to the film. Whereas, obviously, especially in part two, where he's super fucking dark. I mean, I just love part two and that version of Freddy there. But it's just something that you're kind of like, okay, like you said, after Welcome to Prime Time, and then we're just kind of building. And so I kind of expected maybe, I guess, to see some of that. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in four, but it's something new and it takes a little bit of adjustment. And the first few times that I watched it, when I did finally become, you know, a Fredhead, I remember thinking, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I love the first three and I'm just like, you know, and then I think it's one of those after you watch it a few times and you just kind of get used to, we have a new crew here and it's something different than what we're seeing, different ways that people are getting, you know, taken out in the dream world. So I think that's what it was for me, is just a little bit of time to make some adjustments and just kind of accept something new, basically. So Kent, I know that you're a big Freddy's Dead fan, and that is the pinnacle of Nightmare for you, which, oh Lord, we'll have to talk
Freddy's
about
Dead is the best Nightmare on Elm Street that was made.
Okay, well, that's on record now, so we'll definitely be discussing that later. But where does the Dream Master fit in the Nightmare franchise for you? Like we've said, you know, one through three obviously have their place, and then we're starting to get new characters. We're getting stuff that's new. So where does this film fall, I guess, on the chart for you?
Okay, well, I was 2 years old when this came out, and I know, Nathan, for you, one through three are your favorite, and because I was exposed to more along the lines of five and six, so Freddy's Dead, and then also into New Nightmare, that was always, you know, four through six was always my Freddy Krueger, just because it was what I was mostly exposed to when I was younger. And so that's always my favorite Freddy. I like the goofy, funny Freddy. That's what I always felt like set him apart from Leatherface and Jason. And so this is an important movie for me as a Nightmare fan, because this is when we start really getting that heavy transition from the darker, more serious guy to the one that, to what he ended up being. And I always loved the over the top kind of cartoony kills. I think they're so much better than just the standard, you know, razor glove to the throat or chest or stomach or what have you. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, as a Nightmare fan, this is an important film. And I think that most fans are divided into two groups. Either they love one through three or they love, you know, four through six. And I'm a four through six guy. And I enjoy this film. I think there's a lot here. There's a lot of iconic Freddy here. And yeah, it's pretty important to me. And I think it's a pretty important film in the franchise.
I agree, definitely. And one main thing, I think, well, I don't even know that I would say that it's a main thing, but some of the kills are non-traditional from what we were used to seeing. And that is a very important aspect of this film, especially you can check in, but you can't check out. Stuff like that was, I mean, we didn't see that really before. So just ways of people dying, stepping outside the box, like I said, for me, I just think it took a little bit of time to get adjusted to the non-traditional of the 1 through 3. And tons of good stuff in the movie. But one thing that I do just have to say, what the fuck, every time I watch this, because you think it's going to be so badass, and then to me, it's a giant letdown. So, and that is, I love Kincaid, obviously. Now, in Kincaid's death scene, you would think that as complex as that was back then, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen any of the behind-the-scenes stuff of how they actually created that scene in the junkyard, right? But then the death is so fucking weak. I'm like, oh my God, there's all this buildup. Here, you know, Freddy's pumping back up. Here he comes. And then it's just like, ugh. I mean, thoughts on that? Either one of you, Ben?
It's that kill, in my opinion, is the weakest, and probably in this entire movie, aside from maybe the Rick's death, the karate flying glove, that was an abortion. Yeah. But yeah, Kincaid's death was the equivalent to like jerking off for like 3 hours, and then it just poof, just kind of dropping out.
Just a little puff of dust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just there like, was a lot of buildup. That's like...
I mean, if you want to describe that, I mean, feel free. I'll give you the floor.
well, I mean, it's an every other day thing for me. I can go into detail if you'd like.
I mean, it's up to you. If you want to, knock yourself out.
Well, I mean, just watch Kincaid's death scene, and that's my sexual experience every day in a nutshell.
Well, and then you have to add the noise. You have to have a dust puff in there too, right?
Yeah, I'm getting old, so it just comes out as like baby powder.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. So, Ben, what do you think? As far as setting the tone for the rest of the movie, I thought, well, the whole sequence is badass, and then, of course, the puff of dust, but I don't remember thinking in my head, like, God damn it, this better not be, you know, it better step up from here. So, thoughts on Kincaid?
It does. I understand what you're saying. I think the overall scene, yeah, with the junker, I mean, it was fuck. I mean, that's some of the best nightmare stuff right there. I thought, with the dog, you know, pissing fire and everything, Freddy coming back, but it doesn't bother me, his death. I mean, I think he kind of got cheated probably because Joey had another, you know, fucking epic scene with another, you know, nude actress, how he got so lucky. But I don't think it was a, you know, a letdown. I was all right with it.
Well, I was really, I think it was a major fucking letdown, but what I'll say is that the rest of the kills, like you said, outside of the karate bullshit, because that was fucking dumb too. They could have did way better than that. But I mean, it wasn't dumb. It was just kind of like whatever. But
well, I think that was kind of an after thing, the karate. If I'm like something messed up with their original idea, so they threw that together last minute.
They put that together like the day before they shot it.
Yeah. 3 days before, but still, I mean, come on. You couldn't have done something better. I mean, it's Hollywood production. Come on. But either way, the rest of them made up for those letdowns. I mean, really, if you think about the big picture, I think it was pretty minimal compared to some of the cool shit that we got to see later on, which are some of the cooler kills in the Nightmare series, really. Like I said, I mean, the Roach Motel, I mean, that's absolutely badass. I mean, that's got to be right up there on the Nightmare list, really. I mean, what do you guys think? I hear a lot of people talk about that one. Not that it's necessarily the best, but that's pretty fucking cool.
I would argue that the Roach Motel, along with probably Dan's death scene in Part 5, and I think those two are probably the two of the most iconic in the entire franchise. And the Roach Motel, I mean, there's action figures of it.
Oh, yeah. And London1888.com, Christopher Ott, give a shout out to him. I buy a lot of his shit. Hell, he even had shirt poster designs. I don't think he didn't have a shirt because I would have bought it. He had a Roach Motel poster that he did for one of the shows. It was pretty badass. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely iconic. There's absolutely no doubt. I mean, that whole scene is just badass. Great FX work for the time. And one other thing that I have to bitch about is the ending, and it's like evil sees itself, and it's like, come the fuck on. Okay, I mean, like, we can do better than that. I mean, I just thought that how it transpired, the end sequence, that it was just kind of weak. I mean, there's got to be, they could have done something better. I mean, it was a badass with all the arms and everything. I mean, the FX work was awesome. It was badass to watch. I just think that they could have delivered with a better idea. Any thoughts on that?
I think, yeah, totally. I mean, we've seen, but I mean, it goes back to, you got to think the original Nightmare on Elm Street, Nancy kind of just looked at him and, you know, you are shit. And he just goes away or whatever. So playing to that, definitely a letdown. I mean, I think like you said, the arms, the effects were great. It, fucking location, the setting, all that was awesome, you know? Yeah, definitely. They could have, I mean, shit, we could have just chopped his head off like we've done, you know, in the last few Freddies, or something would have been probably a little bit better.
I think that the I think it had the issue that was the reverse issue of Freddy versus Jason. The entire movie was, it had a really terrible idea, but with really well done execution. And the special effects are amazing. And then you get that little cameo by Linnea Quigley. And I mean, I love how it, you know, visually looks, but yeah, the idea is stupid, but not all of them can be Freddy's Dead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I wish we had the time tonight to put that one, to put that bad dog to sleep for good, but we'll have to do a separate episode on that. So yeah, but it's just like with Ben saying that Jason goes to hell. That's the first one that he's seen. It's always gonna be special to him. And you kind of started with 4, 5, and 6, whereas some people would have been more used to seeing 1 through 3. So, I mean, it makes sense. It all falls kind of in the same line as to why you have something that's near and dear to you or you like it better. So it's the same principle. I get it. And, I mean, you can't go wrong with Part 4. I mean, for me personally, it would be exactly the number that it is. If I was going to do a list, it would be number 4 on the list. But that doesn't mean that it's bad. Doesn't mean it's not a great film. I mean, Jesus, all these franchises are kicking out multiple films. So even, for example, well, talking about Friday last week, even if something is number 9, doesn't mean that it's bad. It's just, goddamn, I had all these films to choose from. It's hard to put them in order. So, but if I had to rank them, Part 4 for me would be number 4 on the list. So what would where would it fall on yours, Kent? Would it be number 1 then?
Part 4 would, for me, would probably be, I'm going to go with probably number 3 for me. I know it sounds like I'm being a smartass, but I really do love Freddy's Dead. So for me, it would go Freddy's Dead and then Part 5, Part 4, and then probably 1, 2, 3.
Oh my God. I know that you suffer from whatever it is, Agent Orange. But to have Freddy's Dead at number 1 just absolutely fucking blows me away. I don't even have words for that.
It's the backstory, man. I love backstory. And they gave a lot of, I love everything about that movie. And I watched it 10 million times. Freddy's Dead is my version of Ben's Jason X. Or not Jason X, I'm sorry. Jason Goes to Hell. It's my Jason Goes to Hell.
I gotcha. Now, I remember this was, it was at a Nightmare reunion. When the hell was this? It was Maskfest 2015, so it was 3 years ago. There was a Nightmare reunion there. It was a Dream Warriors reunion. And I don't know if either of you guys were there. And there was a bunch of other Nightmare people there. And Mark Patton's there, Robert Englund, mainly focusing on Nightmare on Elm Street, which was great. And I'm walking through, not where all the Nightmare people are, but one of the other vendor rooms, the biggest one, if you guys remember, the one where if you walk in the back parking lot and you go straight to the left, the big huge rectangular one where normally most of the vendors are at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we drank there last year, didn't we?
Not in this part. Yeah, we did, but this was in the actual convention when you.
Oh, I got you. Okay, I got you. Yeah.
It's the room where most of the vendors were at, and I was walking around or whatever, and I see these guys with a shoulder rig camera, and then another guy walking with him. He's got a clipboard and some notes and a bunch of pens and stuff, and had some other stuff in a bag, like some giveaways. I couldn't really tell what it was, and I had a Nightmare on Elm Street shirt on of some sorts. I don't remember what it was. And I'm walking through, and as I come around the corner, this guy, he points at my shirt. He's like, "Hey, obviously you're a Nightmare fan." I said, "Absolutely, I love Nightmare on Elm Street. It's one of my favorites." And he said, "Well, do you mind doing an interview about Nightmare on Elm Street?" And I said, "What's it for?" And he goes, "Well, it's a secret project. I can't tell you because I don't want it to be biased on any opinions." And I'm like, "Okay." He goes, "We want to get everything straight. We don't want you, if you know, then that might change your answer." So I'm like, "Okay, nope, I get it." And I signed the waiver or whatever. And he starts to ask me some random questions. And then he says, "What's your favorite Nightmare on Elm Street?" And at that time, and it still kind of is, but I said the original. And he's like, "Understandable." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, without the original, we wouldn't have had any of the others." And it just set the tone for one of the most iconic characters of all time. And I just like it. For a lot of reasons, but I said, the other films all have great things to offer, but this one, the original just does it for me. And he's like, "Well, how do you feel about part two?" And I said, I love part two. I said, "I love how dark Freddy is. I think part two is badass. I don't really remember what all else I had to say about it." And then went on with a few more questions. And he said, "What's your least favorite?" And I said, "Well, absolutely, Freddy's dead. That's an easy one." And, he said, "Okay." And he gave me a couple giveaways. I don't remember what they were. And he said, I said, "Now can you tell me what the project is for?" And he said, "It's for Mark Patton's documentary. We're interviewing people to talk about part two for Mark Patton's Scream Queen documentary, which is still not out yet." And here we are three years later. And I don't know, since I haven't seen it, since it's not out, I don't know if my interview made the cut or not. So I'm anxious to see when it finally drops, if they used any of my footage on it. So be on the lookout for that when we finally do get to see it. So yeah, but I mean, I get it. And like I said, for me, I'm kind of right in between with four. Obviously the one, two, and three, they are what they are, and it starts that different chapter with four. So I definitely like four above five and six. So yeah, lots of good shit. But yeah, another thing just to mention, we had talked about the advertising and shit with the Friday anniversaries, and we all remembered the Jason Goes to Hell cover art very vividly. And since we're talking about part four here, I very vividly remember the Dream Master. And well, partly because I was, well, I would have been about six when the movie came out. Yeah, I'd have been six. So I'm a little bit older and can actually have more of a memory of what stood out to me. And obviously the picture of him with Tuesday Night, and I can remember seeing that. That's probably the most vivid memory I have of the video store of the Nightmare films, of the box art. I'd say the Dream Master probably stood out most for me from what I remember as a kid. I don't know about you guys.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because part four, the cover art is pretty special to me. The cover art in particular, because the theater that my grandfather and grandma used to take me to watch movies was an old theater, and it was always real dark in there. And I remember they had kind of wallpapered the walls behind the concession stand of this theater where you got popcorn and everything with 80s posters. And I remember being a little guy, probably like 4 or 5 years old, and one of the ones that they had was Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, and it was one of the dominant ones. It was, you know, pretty centered. And then I also remember distinctly Adventures in Babysitting was one of them, but that's beside the point. That doesn't matter. So I would always, while we were getting popcorn and candy bars and pop and whatever, waiting to go see our movie, I would always adore that poster art, and there's so much going on, and you know, almost all of the Nightmare on Elm Street poster art is amazing, but this one in particular is there's a lot going on, and it's really interesting.
It is. It's very busy, and I just remember that iconic picture of him with Tuesday Night. You all know exactly which one I'm talking about. There was the box art, like you were saying, the busy one, and then there was the separate one with him and her. And for whatever reason, that one just sticks out in my head. Probably because it's pretty simple, and. But I do remember the other two. I just, that iconic picture of him and her, I do recall very vividly. And now, Ben, I know that you have a VHS collection, obviously a large movie collection. But how does, do you recall that at all? I mean, you're younger than us, but I mean, does the Dream Master, does any of the advertising stuff, does that ring a bell with you when you were younger?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the Nightmares had awesome cover art. I think it's the special edition DVD box set that has all the special artwork. But I honestly really can't remember. I know Freddy that sticks out to me the most was part 5, the Dream Child, because it had that carriage on it, that crazy, you know, baby carriage with all the spikes and everything. So honestly, I can't really say, you know, if part 4 or anything really stuck out to me. I was too busy looking at Jason Goes to Hell. But awesome cover art, like all of the Nightmares. But looking back on him now, yeah, part 4 was beautifully done. I mean, there's a lot going on. Freddy's eyeballs kind of like popping out, you know. I think it's a great cover art. Just all of them, they all very well go together. All of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, the box sets, they look great. Some of the other franchises, you know, they're all mixed up. But the Nightmare on Elm Streets were always right on.
Yeah. Now, as far as, I just remember getting pissed off at the part 2 poster, because it's just not really that great for adding signatures to. So most of them, though, yeah, they are pretty good. I mean, the Dream Warriors cover art, yeah, it's badass. And especially part 1. Yeah, absolutely. And Kent's favorite, Freddy's Dead, obviously. I have an original poster, and you know where that poster is at right now, Kent? It's in my fucking closet. It's not,
because you don't want to damage it.
Yeah, because I don't want any UV getting on it. Now, it's signed by Robert Englund, and it was signed probably, I'm going to have to guess here, 8 years ago, maybe. I'm just guessing, but it's been a while. And if you look at any of Robert's signatures, most of them are pretty comparable. Now, Robert usually likes to just write out his name. He doesn't usually use a regular cursive signature, which some do, some don't, whatever. But on almost all of my Robert Englund signatures, they all pretty much look the same. Now, this one, for whatever reason, it was at the end of the day. Now, anybody who stood in Robert Englund's line knows that it is a fucking all-day event sometimes, and you might not even get through on the first day, and they may give you VIP access the second day. I've seen that happen more than once. So anyways, it's after waiting all fucking day long. And I always liked the look of the Freddy's Dead poster, you know, all white with the glove laying there and the dates on it. And if only the movie would have been as cool as the poster, right? So get Robert's signature on it, and he signs it in a way that is not real consistent. I've seen a few other signatures of this style, but I'll have to just show it to you guys, because you're going to look at it and be like, what? And I'm like, I'm not hanging this fucking thing on the wall. It looks like a forgery to me. I've had people make comments, because I used to have it hanging on the wall, and I had people come in and they'd be like, what the hell is that? And I'm like, yep, I don't know. So yeah, that's the reason why it's actually not hanging on the wall, is because I just don't like the way that his signature looks. Now, I know that may just sound absolutely ridiculous, but when it comes to my collectibles, I'm very particular, and I've tried to sell it, and of course nobody wants it because it doesn't look right. So yeah, but
I'm actually looking at two right now I've got hanging up, and they are, I know for a fact that he signed them both, and they look completely different. One, he seemed to lean in more of a cursive kind of style, and the other is all capital letters and all non-cursive, just standard. So, like you, I assume, I'm never going to sell this stuff, but I figure there is going to be an issue down the road if I ever die and my wife or kids try to sell it, because one of them is going to be assumed to be fake. I just don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen his signature a shit ton, and most of it is pretty consistent. Now, I don't know if it was just end of the day, I'm going to switch it up or whatever, but I just remember as I seen him make the R, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And of course, I'm not going to stop him and be like, no, write how you write everything else I usually see. Some of the signatures that I've seen that are similar to this particular one are very early signatures, not like early in his life or whatever, but I guess probably early convention signatures, because conventions haven't always been a big thing like they are nowadays, as you guys are well aware. So I don't know. Maybe he writes his name a different way, like when he signs a check or when he signs legal documents or something like that. I don't know. So maybe that's the reason. And maybe he was just like, oh, shit, I really don't know. And I haven't really been able to find anyone that can give me that exact answer. So I guess I could ask Robert himself this weekend, but I'm not going to stand in line for 8 or 10 hours just to ask him why that would be. So, yeah, but I'll show you guys a picture and you can let me know what you think. Maybe yours is similar, Ken. I don't know. So anyways, final thoughts on this film. Like I said, for me, it's a transitional piece. I like the film. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool shit in there. A lot of good kills, a lot of good taglines. Some of them are kind of a little bit different, but like I said, that's kind of starting to happen here in this film. So it takes a little bit to get used to. And then of course, part five, you know, same thing, you're used to it by then. But yeah, I mean, after just kind of getting used to having a new crowd, because of course we did get to see some of the hangovers from part three, which I thought were great. I just think they deserved better endings to their characters. But other than that, there's a lot of good stuff. I think the, like we already talked about, the ending is a little bit weak. Very well executed, but just a little weak. They could have done something a little bit better, not just as a little piece of mirror or whatever to start the downfall of Freddy. But yeah, I mean, there's a couple other things if I really wanted to get nitpicky, but no, I have a lot of fun with this film, and like I said, it would be number four on the nightmare list for me. So Ben, final thoughts for you.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is a great film. I think a great entry in the Nightmare series. And I think, I don't know if we touched too much on it, but the cast, I feel like they were likable, you know, likable teenagers. You kind of cared about them. You know, I felt bad for Alice, you know, everybody dying and everything. So the cast was really, really fun. The music, I think it had a good overall soundtrack, effects, the kills. There was, you know, like you said, a transition into the comedy a little bit with Freddy, but maybe not too much, not as much as, you know, five or Freddy's Dead. It was, you know, maybe just right. So overall, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I think, was just a great entry in the series. Classic Freddy, classic 80s. And it's always on my watch list. Definitely part one, part three. And if you watch three, you got to go into four. So yeah, I'm all there for the Dream Master.
Classic 80s. You just hit that because that's not something we really discussed. But yeah, when you think of 80s soundtracks and 80s vibes, of course, it's right there. I mean, the styles, the music, everything. So yeah, definitely classic 80s is 100% correct. Kent, final thoughts.
I mean, I agree. I think that this is a solid film. And for me, because of the ones that I prefer, this is, you know, iconic Freddy Krueger. We get, you know, Freddy Nurse and Freddy on the beach and that iconic pizza scene. And I really love the, we didn't really go in, you know, in depth into the film that much, but the truck wreck scene when the truck just kind of wraps around Invisible Freddy. I always loved that when I was younger. And then you get Dr. Freddy in the soul chest. And there's just a lot of good old, new old-fashioned Freddy Krueger here. Ben was talking about the casting and everything, and I agree that the characters are likable, but I think that Alice's acting is so bad that it's almost distracting to me. It's laughably horrible. It's like Tommy Wiseau, The Room bad. But aside from that, you know, everybody else is good. I take issue with, you know, I think Kincaid and Rick's death are a little mediocre, but they make up for it with Joey, Kristen, Sheila, and Debbie. I kind of get bummed out that there's not really any addition to the Freddy mythos in this in terms of progressing the storyline any further as far as Freddy's origins or backstory or any of that. But, you know, thank God Freddy's Dead came along and filled us in on that. So,
right. Well, hang on, though. That is something that I wanted to touch base on that you just mentioned, but the movie is entertaining to the point where you don't really think about it unless you're just being critical. And that simply is what you said of that there's not much progression. It's basically the same thing that we're used to seeing, except for the transition of pulling into the dreams and we obviously have new people. But yeah, I mean, so there's a little bit different than what we're used to seeing, but it's still very much similar to the first couple, or the first few for that matter. So, but yeah, I do agree with that. I do agree with the majority of that. And then, of course, 5 and 6, now those are whole different monsters as far as progression goes, or backstory, however you want to look at that. Just different. So, yeah, I totally get that. And I mean, we didn't talk much about the characters, but I'll agree with Alice. And it's, I guess, one thing that I just consider is that these movies typically, they didn't have well-known actors. Kind of like Friday the 13th. I mean, they were just casting young people getting their fresh start or whatever. But I would have normally expected more, because like, look at Heather Langenkamp. Heather was phenomenal.
Johnny Depp.
Well, no, I just mean like the girl.
Alice.
So Heather Langenkamp did a phenomenal job. You would expect someone who's going to be a centerpiece of the film to be a little stronger acting wise than that. And like, I know you guys have seen Lisa Wilcox in person. She looks absolutely amazing today. She has aged very well. She looks better now than she did.
Yeah, she does.
It's insane. And I see her pretty regularly, and it's just like, wow. I mean, she's definitely drinking out of the fountain of youth. She looks amazing. But like I said, I think she looks better now than she does in the film. And but yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about some stuff that is specific, but the doctor scene, obviously very iconic. And we already talked about the Roach Motel, and there's just so much good stuff as far as that goes. And yes, the truck scene is great too. But to me, before we wrap this up, we can just talk about what our most notable things are for the film. And I'll just throw it out there. For me, I think it's probably the Roach Motel would be the thing that stands out to the most as far as just cool shit that's in the movie. So, Ben, what do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. The Roach Motel, that was the kill of this movie. When you watch part three, you know, you think of the head going into the television, you know, the puppet or something like that. But with four, I think definitely Roach Motel was definitely the standout. I really like the pizza. I think the pizza was fucking creepy, man, with all the, you know, all the faces on it. So, yeah, definitely Roach Motel, the pizza, those were the top for me.
Absolutely, the pizza's great. Like I said, I love the Dr. Freddy too. I mean, that's just awesome. Those would probably be the top three in there. So, highlights for you, Kent, and we'll close this out.
I 100% agree. The Roach Motel death and also the pizza. And actually, a while back, got commissioned to do a pizza in latex, and I you know, rolled it over in my head for a couple of days, and I was like, well, I mean, I can take the time to sculpt a fucking pizza, or I can just order one and mold it. So I ordered a pizza and sculpted sausages, and I sculpted faces and worked it literally into the cheese, and then I just fucking molded that thing like it was a sculpture, and it turned out phenomenal. And the Roach Motel death scene and the pizza, and I also really like the beach scene. Definitely the standout aspects of this film.
Yeah, the beach is good. It obviously wasn't shot at a real beach, so you can tell that it's all so fabricated. It kind of kills it a little bit for me, but yeah, that's another great scene. And I guess we pretty much covered all the bases as far as that goes. So that's just our general thoughts and acknowledgement of the 30th anniversary of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4. If you haven't seen the film in a while, what better time than to give it a watch this week? If you've never seen it and you've seen the first couple or even the first three, then absolutely the perfect time to finally watch number 4. You've definitely been missing out. But that wraps up another episode of Death Curse Radio, so please rate and review wherever the hell you listen to the show at. Check us out on Facebook at Death Curse Radio or our website, deathcurseradio.com. You can check in, but you can't check out.
Evil lurks in the mind of a madman.
This is the end, friend.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell. From the prime time, bitch.
I am the devil. And I am here to do the devil's work.
Candyman.
Candyman.
eternal.
Because I've seen enough horror movies to know any weirdo wearing a mask is never friendly.
That is what
I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Some things have a strange idea entertainment.